When you're inspired by some great purpose, some extraordinary project, all of your thoughts break their bonds, which means you offer up to your desires the same vibrational matching energy. If you desire it, you say to yourself, it's on its way, I'm anticipating, I'm looking for it. All of your thoughts break their bonds. Second, your mind transcends limitations. This is the natural outgrowth, Patanjali suggests in his writing, this is the natural outgrowth of having your thoughts break their bonds, is that you now create a mind, an expectation, if you will, that transcends all limitations. You literally don't see any reason for something not showing up. And this becomes almost like a magical way of being. I'm going to tell you a story, because the best way to illustrate this is through an example. Back in 1994, in April, the first week in April, a plane crashed in a country in Africa, in Rwanda. The president of Rwanda, a Hutu, was killed. The next day, in this country, which is the size of the state of Maryland, with 10 million people approximately living in it, machetes were passed out to virtually everybody over the age of 14 in the country. They had already been shipped in, and they were in the business of distributing these machetes. There was a conspiracy of some kind afoot in order to create something that has unfortunately been known as ethnic cleansing. And the population of Rwanda was approximately 90% Hutu and 10% Tutsi. And the Hutus blamed the Tutsis for the death of the president, and they began a systematic annihilation of every Tutsi person in the country, 1 million people. Now, this killing began early in April. There was a woman who lived in the more rural part of Rwanda, in a village, and she was away at college. Her name was Immaculee Ilibagiza, and Immaculee called her father and said that she would like to come home for Easter vacation. The father insisted that she come. She was sort of reserved about doing it. It's a 200-mile ride. It's not an easy trip and so on. But he persuaded her to come. And she came home. She arrived home, and the killing began the next day. 700 of her girlfriends at the college that she was attending, the following day after she left, were all herded into the cafeteria, and they threw grenades in there and blew them all up. They were all killed. Now, in a period of 90 days, 91 days to be exact, almost 1 million people, 900 and some thousand people, were killed on the streets, all with machetes and clubs and grenades and so on. And if you were a Hutu, even if you were married to a Tutsi woman, you were obliged to kill her. If you had children, you were obliged to kill them. If you had a Tutsi relative, you were obliged to kill them. If you didn't kill them, you would be killed yourself. And this was all being done and orchestrated through the radio, encouraging people to kill the cockroaches. Some of you may have seen the film Hotel Rwanda, which kind of gives a little bit of a flavor of it. But Immaculee was a woman who was 24 years old. She was home, and she was a Tutsi. So she was marked for certain death. Her father persuaded her to hide in a pastor's home. A pastor was a Hutu. And they had a bathroom in this home that was the size of a table, a kitchen table, 3 feet by 4 feet. I'm not exaggerating. 3 feet by 4 feet. Seven women were herded into this tiny little room, and a valet was put up in front of them. They stayed there for 91 days. She's 5'9". When she was released and freed by the French in July, that's all of April, all of May, all of June, she weighed 65 pounds. When she was freed, she said that every dog in Rwanda had to be slaughtered because they had been eating human flesh for the previous 90 days. This was all going on and the world knew about it. President Clinton called it the greatest failure of his administration that they didn't step in to do something to stop this killing. The day that the president was killed and the killing began, this ethnic cleansing, we didn't pay attention to it too much because our focus was on a white Bronco in Los Angeles. It was the same day as the O.J. Simpson saga as it began. And it didn't get headlines, although there was much news about it. We knew something terrible was going on in Rwanda. All of the banks closed, all of the schools closed, all of the businesses closed, and the only business in Rwanda was to kill Tutsis with machetes. Day in and day out, they were hunted wherever they were. Only a few escaped, and those that escaped, escaped to the south, to the Congo. I think it was about 1% of the women of who were Tutsis in Rwanda survived. Now, I tell this story because I was giving a lecture in New York City for the Omega Institute, and a woman came up to me at the end of my lecture from Africa, beautiful woman, and she told me that she was a survivor of, she was a Tutsi survivor of Rwanda. Now, I had pretty much familiarized myself with what was going on in Rwanda at that time and was trying to raise money and do some of the things that we could to bring the world's attention to it. She had a magical quality about her. I only spoke to her for about 2 minutes. She stunned me with her energy. There was something about her that I just I couldn't forget. And she exchanged email addresses with my daughter, Skye, who was singing at that event with me. And when the event was over and I went back home, I kept asking Skye, have you heard from the woman from Rwanda? And she said no. And finally, after a week transpired, she got an email from her. And I immediately called her and I asked Immaculee if she would be willing to write her story. She said, I've already written it, but no one will publish it because her native language is Kinyarwanda. Her next language is French, and she knew very little English. In fact, she taught herself English while she was in the bathroom. She knew no English when she went in 91 days. She spent a good part of that time learning English. Now, I must tell you that in this bathroom where she was hiding with seven other women, the home was searched on, I think, 10 or 11 different occasions by over 200 men. It was just a small bungalow home. She could literally see them through this crack, and they were 5 inches away from her. She could see men with machetes asking for her. The story is, as soon as I found out that she had written it, I said, send me everything that you've written. She'd written over 150,000 words 5 years after escaping and coming to the United States.